Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, we're on. Good evening. Welcome to Eerie House Radio.
Yeah.
I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with
Dave Brinkley from Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And I see he's even in the chat. We're here along with
It is I, God of the Gold, blabla it to you all.
Yes, good to see you in the chat. For now.
Finally.
For now, yeah.
After what?
Two and a half months. We can fix that.
Yeah, yeah. Tempt me. No. Good evening and welcome. Good old Bob and Fogsbane join us in the chat live.
There they are.
Mm-hmm. And we got...
And more to come. More to come.
We got music box stories. So I can imagine these are going to be crime-related, yes?
Yes, these three are crime-related. And tomorrow night's a little bit more of a ghost horror story.
Ooh, good. Back to the horror, scary, creepy stuff. But murder and crime is pretty creepy. And tonight we've got Philo Vance, The Lives of Harry Lime, and Let George Do It.
Yeah.
Which
our good old friend Bob
one.
Bailey. Yes. Okay, then you can get in trouble for that too. But
yes, in most states.
Good old Bob Bailey's back with Let George Do It. That was kind of his breakout role. He'd been around, done a few movies and such, but he just never really looked the part. But boy, did he have a voice!
He did. He was, I love him as Johnny Dollar, and then tonight it's Let George Do It.
He could tap dance too.
Yep.
Only with Ernest
Borgnine.
Whatever
it took.
Yeah.
Yes. Only with Ernest.
We should have him as a guest someday.
How did you know that? I didn't know Ernest could tap dance. Wow.
Mm-hmm. On radio, you wouldn't believe what people can do.
I think it's in Hollywood Babylon. Anyway. Read it.
Actually, I saw Lee J. Cobb. Remember big old Lee J. Cobb? And,
oh, my gosh, and yeah.
I saw him do some dancing on the Dean Martin show. Of course, you drink what Dean drank, and anybody can dance, right?
Yeah, sure.
Dean was drinking colored water. That's the big push.
Yes.
Yep.
Ticked off Frank Sinatra, because for years Sinatra was paying for booze, and he absolutely accidentally picked up Dean's glass once and said, "What the hell is this? I've been paying for booze.
What am I paying for?
You know?"
Well, it was probably for all the people that were drinking around him, because they were like, let's go Shriner and all that stuff. But Dean
good old days.
Not going, what?
And the good old days when everybody
good
got
old days.
Schnockered on the spot.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and so there was a comedian, his name was Brooks, something
now,
he acted like
Foster
he was drunk.
Brooks.
You're yes,
Foster,
yes.
Brooks. Foster
Brooks,
yeah.
Yeah.
He was the best
yeah.
drunk
and,
ever.
Yeah, I think he and Dean were taking lessons off each other or something. I don't know.
Maybe. I miss Foster Brooks. He was brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
He was, yeah.
His
and towards the end
of
his
Christmas
career, when he wasn't getting many jobs in comedy, he sold some records on one of those TV-type records where he
mm-hmm.
did some singing. He had a really nice little baritone voice there.
Yep, and then
yeah,
he sobered up
Leonard
and his career was over.
Yeah. I recall William Shatner tried the same thing, and yeah.
He wrote a book, How the Wagon Destroyed Me. So, Foster Brooks, man. We got some great radio tonight.
Yeah, we do.
And, we got some great actors and Jackson Beck and Bob Bailey and Orson Welles. I mean, that's a heck of a night and a heck of a lineup.
Yeah. Uh-huh. When I think of Jackson Beck, I can't help but think of two particular characters on television He was the voice of one of the Blutos, I think, for a while. In the later Popeyes.
I think he was in the original Popeyes, and then he also did, I think, the professor role in the other, can't get off on keyboard.
Yep, and also
the other,
Superman.
Yes, I was
right.
going to say.
He was
the announcer.
He spent his whole life either on radio or, because he did a lot of mystery theaters as well, but either on radio or as voiceover. I don't know that he ever did. I don't know that he ever did a on-camera bit.
Yeah, he may not have. I'm struggling to recall anything hearing his voice in a film. That'd be a good one to look up on IMDb. But while you're doing that, we're going to be playing some radio for you tonight. And I don't know, maybe we could start with George.
I want to say Jackson Beck was the voice of also Batman for a short lived period of time. Anyway,
maybe.
It may have been on one of those TV ones, possibly. Yeah.
No, possibly a Golden Record, or there was a very short lived Batman radio show, or on Superman. Maybe he was. I can't remember. Anyway, more radio.
Yeah.
You're right. They did have somebody who played Batman on the radio to give Superman a spell. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know who that was.
More than one happened a few times.
Oh, look at that! Carl Kolchak is in our chat room.
Yeah.
Excuse me. What?
Carl
Kolchak.
Yeah.
Fogsbane enjoyed last weekend. We did. The Night Strangler. No, the Night Stalker.
Night Stalker. Yeah.
Oh, the first one, yeah.
Yes, yeah, we did that in Horrible Horror last Saturday.
A very, very good made-for-television movie.
50th anniversary, and it was one of the top-rated movies.
It's hard to believe. It's hard to believe that it was 50 years ago. And when they did the final screening before they took it to television, because it was already slated for television, they had a live audience there, and they stood up and cheered at the end of it. And the producers and the actors looked at each other and said, he said, we should have made this released as a theater film instead of a made-for-TV. Igor, you pointed out something that I didn't know there on your show. Go ahead, tell it.
What?
How it did become a theater film elsewhere.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it went overseas, and they added content. And I believe the next, I think it's either this film or the Night Strangler has additional content. And the reason for that is because it was shipped overseas and did get theater run, which is just amazing.
Gentlemen, we have someone who just entered the room, and I think I know who it is.
Oh.
Entree.
Oh, greetings and felicitations. Hello.
Doors open. We're dressed.
It's CW.
Thankfully.
Hello, CW. Blay, blay.
Blay, blay.
Blay, blay.
So you're talking about there's a dish. So there's additional things to the Night Stalker that I have not even seen.
The Night Strangler has additional footage because they took the TV movie and they shipped it overseas. They added additional content because it aired in theaters. And I have that additional content to bring to everybody at some point in the future. Last Saturday... CW, I aired the Night Stalker TV movie on Horrible Horror.
Yep.
Listeners, real
quick, if you really, really dig Kolchak, we did a Kolchak special. Oh, I can't remember when right now, but go back into the archives and look it up. We had a great guest, Tom Dowidziak.
Oh, yeah, that writer.
Mark Dowidziak, yeah.
Mark. I apologize.
Bill Dowidziak, yeah. That guy.
Sorry, Mark.
Tom's brother.
Sorry, Bill.
I don't know.
Sorry, George. Sorry, Alfonso.
If you're ever able to find his book on the Night Stalker, If you see it someplace, grab it, because that thing is absolutely as rare as it can be.
It was an edited part. Fogbane made mention that Gurn Blanston was credited in the Night Stalker. There's this one little insert where Gar made it into the credits. it was funny.
Okay. We better get rolling with radio because we got a lots of it. We got the whole game here tonight. Gar, CW, and that other guy that hangs around here.
The guy that pushes the buttons. We need that guy to push the buttons.
Don't push my buttons. Why, I'll...
Bob Green said he had the book. That's cool.
If I hear a goat screaming in the background.
Hey,
goat?
Mark signed it for him, too. Holy goats.
Uh-oh, goat just... You'll go better look out for that train.
Well, if we're going to start things off, we ought to let George do it with a story called The Old Style. And this one was originally broadcast on...
February 6, 1950.
Personal notice, change is my stock and trade. If the job's too tough for you to handle, you got a job for me, George Valentine. Write full details. Standard Oil Company of California, on behalf of independent Chevron gas stations and standard stations throughout the West, invites you to Let George Do It. The Old Style, another adventure of George Valentine.
Mr. George Valentine, dear sir, my name is Jeremiah Stark. Perhaps you've heard it in connection with crime, with the study of crime, that is. I am, by vocation, an antiquarian, the owner of a modest curio shop on South Lane. But by avocation, Mr. Valentine, I've become rather an authority, if I do say so myself, on those desperate and terrifying deeds which men have committed in the past. Mr. Valentine, I've only this morning stumbled into a mystery so intriguing that I am at a complete loss to solve its riddle. Perhaps you can. Or perhaps someone must die. Sincerely, Jeremiah Stark.
Huh. It's certainly a curio shop, all right.
Yeah.
Antique bedsteads. Snuff boxes and old porcelain.
Everything but a Venus with a clock in her stomach.
I don't know, George. There's Diana on a hat rack.
Yeah, the kind of place you buy your relatives' presents.
You mean if they happen to be spiders or bats?
Hey, wait a minute, Angel. The stuff on this counter here. Knife, piece of rope, and the stuff in the glass case.
This is the actual Bowie knife that figured so prominently in the Sykes Jefferson killings in October 1912.
Oh, there's a card on each item. 1893, hangman's noose.
This broken wine goblet was Exhibit A in the state of Illinois' trial in early 1903 of Eric Stockwitz.
He killed his wife, you know.
Hmm?
She was a dancer.
What's that?
The old Sarah Bernhardt Theater, stage doorman. He died, too, of course, but it was 14 years in the solving.
Well, so you're the authority, huh?
Yes, Mr. Valentine, Jeremiah Stark. Here, let me show you. If you look closely... You can still detect traces of the original blood.
Oh, no, no, never mind. Thanks.
Fascinating case. In the old style. The grand tradition.
Yes, well, it's quite an exhibit you've got, Mr. Stark. But...
Just the one counter here for the choicest items. I'm rather discriminating, you know, regarding my hobby. But, of course, alongside of you, Mr. Valentine, after all, murder is your business.
Well, it's not my pleasure, Mr. Stark, so let's have it. What's your problem?
Oh, of course, of course. Well, to begin with, this morning, I received an item in the mail. I have no earthly idea who might have sent it, mind you, but, Mr. Valentine, it, too, is in the old style.
What do you mean? What is it?
Here it is. A little box.
Little old-fashioned flowers painted on it. And you have dusted my heart with your dainty smile, made sweet my soul with your own sweet glance, painted lids of our lives only shield our shy love, so lift them and murmur that I have a chance.
Yeah, it's a little on the sentimental side. But what's in
it? Go on, open it.
Oh, a music box, of course. It's plain, let me call you sweetheart.
All right, so what? So you got a music box in the mail with a little corn painted on it.
Well, Mr. Valentine, people from all over send me things, send me souvenirs, mementos of death.
Great friends you got.
I have no friends. People send me little items for my collection, my hobby.
But you said in your letter that someone must die. I don't understand what this music box...
Now, please. Would anyone send such an item without giving their name, with no note, with only a crudely printed address?
Well, now I grant
you. And, Mr. Valentine, you have seen for yourself every other item I have bears a tag with a date. The historical date of each separate murder. Well, look here. Here is the puzzle. The bottom of the music box. Underneath is a tag. You see it? A tag with a crudely printed date. Just a date, that is all. But the date... It's tomorrow. Here's the paper it was sent in.
A memento of a murder to come, huh? Well, it's the same printing as the wrapper, all right, isn't it? No name, no indication.
The wrapper was postmarked here in the city, George.
Mr. Valentine, there's only one possible clue I can suggest. A man. A man who betrayed more than the usual interest in this box.
What man? When?
About noon he came in. I remember, big, bulky, wearing a brown overcoat. And he happened to glance at this counter. The man looked at the music box. He examined it. Then he noticed the date and Mr. Valentine. That man left this store as though he had seen a ghost.
Why didn't you stop him?
I tried to. I was busy with another customer. He was a tall man, graying a bit, sad-looking man, sensitive.
Had you ever seen him before?
Yes, just 2 days ago in Joe Murphy's barbershop down the street. Murphy might know his name, though, of course, I don't.
Uh-huh.
You know, Mr. Valentine, I had the peculiar impression of this happening before. When I read the poem on the music box, it struck me as funny, but I don't know why. There's the clue. That's all I remember.
Well, Brooksy, so far it strikes me as crazy.
Why, Mr.
But take it easy, Mr. Stark. That doesn't mean I won't go chasing after your one clue. Crazy or not, I don't want any murders to happen tomorrow.
Mr. Elmington, that's his name. Always wears brown overcoats, the best material.
Mm-hmm.
Been coming in here for haircuts the past 10 years. Yes, it's Mr. Elmington. That's the man Stark means.
Hey, hurry enough, will you, John? The old lady will chew my ears off.
I'll be with you in just a minute, sir. Yes, Mr. Valentine, that's the man Stark referred to.
Elmington, huh?
Not the usual type in this part of town. He made his wad and moved out. Still faithful to the old barber, that's all.
What else do you know about him, Mr. Murphy? Where could we find him?
Telephone book, probably. You don't talk much.
Why? Well, look, Joe, we're not prying. We're just
trying to... He made his money manufacturing barrel hoops, if that'll help you any.
A long way from music boxes, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, thanks a lot, Joe. We can find him.
Just a minute, Mr. Valentine.
Joe, for gosh sake!
Be right back. Did you say music box?
Yeah. A particular music box. Plays Let Me Call You Sweetheart. Has a poem on top.
Yes, of course it does.
You mean you saw it down there in Mr. Stark's curio shop, too?
No, but I know it. The music box belongs to Miss Castor.
What? Who's Miss Castor?
My manicurist, Mr. Valentine. Emily Castor. A very beautiful young girl. A real lady.
Huh? And, George, how did it get...
What's the matter? I thought you were in here for something serious. Yes, yes. And that's when Jeremiah Stark noticed Mr. Elmington in my shop here a couple of days ago. A music box, sure.
All right, clear this up, will you, Buster? What's the gag?
Well, you saw it, didn't you? That's when Miss Castor got it a couple of days ago. Delivery boy brought it to her here. She'd no idea who sent it, but I remember she was manicuring Elmington's nails at the time. A sallow-faced man was waiting. Helped her open the package. Got a big kick out of it. Jeremiah Stark, he was under the towel half asleep.
George, Mr. Stark said he had the impression of it's happening before, of there being something funny about the poem, and if he was half asleep...
Of course it's funny, don't you think so? You'd have dusted my heart with your dainty smile, made sweet my soul with your own sweet glance. Miss Castor, she nearly died of laughing. They all did. Oh, my sweet soul, she said. What corn, she said. On whose foot, I said. That killed them. I got the biggest laugh of all.
Well, what's the matter? What's serious about it? Joe, I really don't know.
Just a thing somebody sent her for a gag. On whose foot, I said. Sure, I got the biggest laugh
of all.
Yeah,
yeah, Buster. But how did the music box get back into the mail and over to Stark's place? What did she do with it?
Huh? I figured she just threw it in the first cornfield.
Well, where is she? Where is Emily Castor now?
There you got me. just out having fun, I figured.
What do you mean?
Well, she hasn't been to work all day. You don't think there's anything wrong, do you?
Here we are, Angel. Second door is Emily's.
And here's the landlady's key, George. Oh, George.
Yeah. Dead, all right. Stabbed.
It must be he. Brown overcoat. Tall. Green.
Sure. It's Mr. Elmington's body, all right.
John H. Elmington, wealthy, honest, no enemies. Manufactured barrel hoops. That's for us to jump through, of course.
Just the facts, Lieutenant.
Facts? What facts? We've been at it 3 hours, and what have we got? Hurry up the pictures, will you, boys?
But you said he was married.
And not too happily, which does begin to explain his being killed in the room of a manicurist. I don't know how long this had been going on.
How long would it been going on? Oh, if that isn't just like a man adding two and two to get five.
Okay, okay, Mrs. Vaughn.
When I told you already, she only seen him on Mondays, and he took her to the races, Mr. Lieutenant. So there, that much I do know. And now, if you think anything goes on at the races but horses, then you're sadly mistaken.
Oh, now, look here. We're really not drawing any conclusions or pointing any fingers either. But as her landlady, you'd know. Emily is a girl who likes to have a good time, isn't she?
If an unhappy man with some money like this, Mr. Elmington, wants to take her to the races sometimes, do you think she's crazy?
Maybe, I don't know. Who's her regular boyfriend?
That's what I mean. She doesn't have many. Only been in town 3 or 4 months. Nobody's steady. She isn't a type.
All right, all right. But who?
Well, there's one man, a little older, sort of nearsighted. Then there's a boy called the Duke. Oh, he's a real live wire. He says the funniest things. But that's all there is, except the occasionals. And I tell you, any girl is crazy if she don't go to the races.
Lieutenant, I've taken the knife. Okay, if we move the body off the rug?
Yeah, sure, Doc. Go ahead.
The overcoat's twisted under him. Thought maybe... Yeah, there's something in his pocket. Look out, it'll drop.
George.
Yeah, music box. The tune. Pull him on top.
George, it's the same box.
Is it? Angel, things are finally beginning to make sense. What's the time, Johnson?
Huh? 5 minutes to midnight. Why?
Because there's a tag on this box, and it's dated today. And there's been a murder.
Today? But George...
I know, Angel. The other tag on Stark's box was tomorrow. Well, in a few minutes, it'll be tomorrow. Come on.
Whoopsie, quick ending to part one of Let George Do It the Old Style.
I don't think I'm familiar with Let George Do It.
Yep. That's true. Where are the boys?
I had the mute put on. I'm sorry.
Ended quick for you, too, huh?
No, I just started talking and forgot I put it on, you know. Not that anybody else would ever forget to turn their microphone back on, but...
I'm glad I called in everyone who had dead air.
The
it wasn't
dead,
I was talking the whole time.
I've been accused of having dead air when I'm talking, so there.
Or at least bad air. One of the air.
Yes, it does. Only if I haven't flossed.
Oh, my.
Night
yes.
Tonight.
Well, George has already figured it out, huh? He figured it out.
Or
what did he figure out?
He already figured it out because it's almost tomorrow.
Oh, right. Oh, that. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, remember?
Because by then it'll be tomorrow, but it's not tomorrow now.
See,
that's right.
He wouldn't have figured it out today, because today nobody wears a wristwatch, right?
Yeah.
That's true. People do not.
Only as a fashion statement. Everyone who has a wristwatch will say, what time is it? And they'll pull out their smart device while they have a very snazzy-looking wristwatch on their
on their
wrist and ignore it, except to show it off.
The old Rolex, yep.
I
look at my Rolex.
I remember when they first came out, with the digital displays on your wristwatch, and you had to press little buttons and stuff. And then before that, you actually had to read a watch. Or read a clock.
And I remember John Cameron Swayze going, "It's still ticking."
That's right. Oh, yeah.
After brutalizing wristwatches.
Now, my question, who's sitting there licking wristwatches? That's what I never, he takes a licking.
I don't know about that, but I remember the one where he put it on a motorboat engine and turned it on and put it in the water, and it shredded up the band. But it was still ticking.
No cards and letters, ladies. We weren't talking about motorboating. We were talking about taking a, anyway.
Jesus, God, you didn't go there. You terrible
before
bad
the show,
man.
God. That's before the show.
You're a bad man. You're a bad man.
Gar.
And I'm so proud. Anyway.
Well, you would have to have two wristwatches to do that. But anyway, I digress.
I misheard. Everybody cut. Talking about these Rolexes, and I said Rolodex.
Rolodex.
Yeah, I wore a Rolodex once. That did not work the same way. Nope.
What did you duct tape a Rolodex to your wrist to see if it worked?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I want to show them how you know that I could spend money on a expensive watch. So I taped a Rolodex.
Well, at least it kept spinning. So
And I had all those numbers right in my hand.
By the way, speaking of clocks and go ahead,
yes.
CW.
Oh, I was going to say, you have a real quality Rolex when you buy one from a street vendor and it has a triple X at the end versus just the one X. That's a Rolex, all right, triple X.
Yep. And it has a Mickey Mouse face, too,
Is anybody here besides me old enough to remember those really old clocks that had the glowing numbers that would, like, you would hold it up to, like, a light bulb or whatever, and it would glow for quite a while at night.
Yes. When
I
was
believe
in the North
some
Atlantic.
Of them were found to be dangerous later on or something, like you get cancer.
Radium,
that's where you get
radium,
into that don't lick your wristwatch, that. But when I was in the Navy up in the Arctic Circle, we had those, and then late at night you could see a guy on deck because his wristwatch was glowing. It was crazy.
And later on, it was the guy who...
You couldn't see him, but you could see the watch,
Later on, the dude himself was glowing.
I've glowed... I was going to say, I've glowed at night a few times myself, back in college.
Yes. But what happens at college stays at college. Just remember.
Mm-hmm. I think W.C. Fields said that, didn't he? Yeah.
No, I don't think W.C. Fields went to college.
Nor did he go to Vegas. So with that being said, we need to wrap up. Let George do it already. Let George do it. Let George do it old style.
Back to the land of youth.
Oh, my head. He struck me in the head.
All right, now take it easy, Mr. Stark.
Yeah, this is it, Valentine, an old vase. Must have been smacked down on him from behind.
George. Yeah, Angel?
George, the first music box is still back there on the counter, and the tag is just the same as it was, too, dated tomorrow.
You mean now it's today, Angel? It's 10 minutes after 12. Stark must have been attacked just after midnight, just a second before we got here. Oh, it's a great case, Johnson, the old-fashioned style.
Huh?
Yeah, in the grand tradition. We're up against a killer who keeps his promises. I wonder how many more music boxes he sent around town.
Return to tonight's adventure of George Valentine in just a moment. When was the last time your car's battery had a drink? One of the biggest reasons automobile batteries fail is simply because of lack of water. That's why it's important to get regular battery check, where they specialize in protective service at standard stations and independent Chevron gas stations. They'll make certain that water in the battery is kept at the right level. They'll inspect the battery cables for signs of wear or corrosion, take a hydrometer reading, make sure terminal posts and clamps are clean and tight. Remember, a battery kept in A1 condition helps your car start faster, helps keep lights bright, helps the radio and heater to do their best. So why not ask for a battery check tomorrow? It's another protective service available at independent Chevron gas stations and standard stations where they say and mean, we take better care of your car. Back to tonight's adventure of George Valentine. A little old-fashioned music box. But the only trouble is there seems to be more than one. And so far, there's been more than one attempt at murder. Mr. Elmington is dead. And the man who started this case, the man whose hobby is collecting mementos of death, has very nearly collected death himself.
Just sitting here making out some bills. That's all I was doing.
Sure, sure. Like a sitting duck. And the vase you were hit with, Mr. Strike, was grabbed right off the counter there behind you. If we hadn't come in here so fast after midnight, you'd have been a dead duck.
It was the desk, I think, the roll top.
What's that, Mr. Strike?
The top of the desk here took part of the blow, too, you see. That's what saved me. I was leaning over. I'm nearsighted. Be thankful for your infirmities.
Yeah. Well, you're all right now.
Yeah, but your head must be soft to start with. Sitting here alone at night when you'd already received a music box.
But it was for my collection. It had nothing to do with me.
You thought it didn't have anything to do with you.
Well, how could it? Why would anyone want to kill me? I have no enemies, no debts, no money to steal.
Don't ask us to make any sense out of it, Mr. Stark. You're the one who likes mysteries and riddles.
Well, I grant you. But I prefer the type that are already solved.
Oh, sure, sure. The old style. All neatly laid away in a glass case with clues and motives.
But this is like some of those cases. The terrifying type, without rhyme or reason. Now, it must have been the same man who attacked us both, Mr. Elmington and me. And yet we have absolutely nothing in common. We've never even been introduced.
You don't have to rub it in. We know we're up against a lunatic. Who else would send music boxes with dates
on
them?
Wait a minute, Johnson. Wait a minute. Maybe it makes both rhyme and reason. At least there's a poem in it. And at least we know now why Elmington acted so funny when he was in the store here today.
Yes, he must have already received his music box. And when he saw the one here with a different date...
Sure, Brooksy. He tore out of here and up to the girl's place to ask questions, maybe. Only he got killed for his trouble. You say you're nearsighted, eh, Mr. Stark?
Well, yes. I need correction in both eyes, but the left one...
She doesn't have any steady boyfriends, but there's one called Duke. And one man a little older, sort of nearsighted.
George.
Hey.
I beg your pardon.
Miss Emily Castor, there's something you had in common with Mr. Elmington, isn't it? An interest in the same girl, the manicurist. Well, come on, you are the one the landlady was referring to.
No, Mr. Valentine, I mean, yes, in a way. But you wouldn't exactly call it an interest. I've only escorted her out a few times.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah, it's a pattern, all right. Duke, come on, who's he?
Duke?
Yes, Duke. He's the other one, isn't he? The other boyfriend?
Oh, really? I don't believe I've ever heard his name.
Well, come on, think, will you? Landlady wasn't any help. What's he look like? What's the rest of his name?
Forget it, Lieutenant. There isn't time.
Isn't time. The girl's good-looking. There's liable to be hundreds of boyfriends.
Johnson, I'll buy. We're up against a crackpot. Sure, find Duke. Find everybody. But it's the music boxes we're after. So get every cop in town after Emily Castor.
Sure.
Find the girl and quick. She's the one we know got a music box first. Now, you want to make any bets she's dead?
Valentine, do you happen to know, did Emily Castor have her manicure stuff yesterday?
What's that, Johnson?
A pair of manicure scissors, her initials, EK.
Where'd you find them?
They just turned up in the police department's own lost and found.
Excuse me.
Hey, wait a minute. Joe, where are you going so fast?
Mr. Valentine, Miss Brooks, good evening. Well, you see, I was
just... Never mind, Joe. When did your manicurist lose her scissors?
What?
Her manicure scissors. You know, they had her initials on them.
Yes,
and...
I understood, but... Why, I don't remember her losing them.
Uh-huh, so it is a lead, Angel. She didn't lose them until yesterday, the day she disappeared.
Mr. Murphy, did you ever see one of her boyfriends named Duke?
The police have already asked me. I've never pried into her personal life.
Never dated her yourself, huh?
My own employee... I wouldn't presume to. Why? Why do you ask?
Why do we ask anything? For instance, what are you doing out so late, leaving your quarters here in such a hurry?
Well, I was just coming to see you, Mr. Valentine.
Yeah?
I found this left at my door tonight. See? A music box.
All right, Valentine, all right. So everybody's getting one. Maybe you'll get a music box yourself someday.
But how many music boxes are there? And we're not protecting the girl, are we, Johnson? And where's Duke?
We haven't even found him yet. Forget it. There isn't time.
Listen, if you just check the place the music boxes were made or sold, if we only knew how many there may be in town.
There isn't time. It was your idea. Get in the car. Find the girl, you said. Well, don't get your hopes up, but we found the newsboy who turned in the manicure scissors to Lost and Found. He found them in the lobby of an apartment building.
Well, this is the last chance, top floor.
Yeah, any building that hasn't got an elevator.
Ought to have the rent reduced. Probably did 50 years ago.
What a joint. Nobody knows anybody. No janitor. Place hasn't even been swept out since McKinley's
well,
election.
At least if Emily dropped the scissors here, maybe she was someplace in the building. Hey, hold it. There's only one door.
One apartment.
Yeah. Yeah. One door with cloth stuffed in the keyhole.
Yeah. On the outside. Cloth stuffed in the crack under the door, too. Put out that cigarette.
Hey, Bert, here goes.
And you're wasting your time. Come on, hit this one. Hurt.
A man. The body of a man.
Every time we go looking for that dame, what do we find? A dame? Oh, no. Just men. The bodies of men. As if that ain't tough enough. Listen. Just listen to it, will you?
This guy didn't die from gas, Johnson. He was shot.
Shot a long time ago. He's been dead for hours.
Yeah. And he's a young guy. Wears flashy suspenders, a real fancy tie.
Huh? What are you talking about?
Johnson, we have now found the Duke. Lieutenant, come here.
Huh?
And Joe, Mr. Stark, you both stick around.
Yes, sure.
Look at this, Lieutenant. More cloth stuffed around the street window, and the window's nailed shut.
All right, so the murderer planned to turn the gas on this guy Duke and shot him instead.
That's a radiator, friend. This place has steam heat, no gas.
Oh.
Yeah, and this overturned chair. And a bunch of neckties standing by it. Some of them still knotted. Torn. See, look here. Lipstick on one of them.
Hey.
Yeah, someplace around here. Wait a second. Top floor, isn't it? I looked in the closet once, but maybe... Yeah. Yeah, here we are. It's been banged into place.
Well, then, Pan, what in the...
Hand me that
woman?
Chair. No, no, the one right
hey.
Here. Sure, it's the one she used, and it kicked over. Escape door to the roof, Johnson. It's in all these old buildings.
Hey, hey, look here in their edge. Blood on these splinters. Fresh.
Sure, of course. She just got out of here a few minutes ago.
Lieutenant, Lieutenant, what's going on?
Never mind, never mind, Stark. Brace my leg, Johnson. This trap door is heavy. There we are.
Yep.
Okay, come on.
Yep. Check. Boy, it's windy up here.
Yeah. Okay, swing your flashlight.
Hey, beyond that stack. Over there by the edge.
Mm. Oh, yeah, there she is. There she... Turn it off. Turn that light off.
Don't come near me. Don't touch me. I'll jump. I'll
jump. Oh, it's her, all right, Mr. Valentine. It's my manicurist, Miss Castor. Only foot in the world is...
Yeah,
she...
I know, Joe. Turn the flashlight on your badge, Johnson.
Huh? But come on.
No, no, stand still. The flashlight on your badge.
She knows me, Mr. Valentine. Knows my voice. Miss Castor. Miss Castor.
No, no, Joe. Stand still. You too.
Oh, but that... Girl
that
over
girl
there.
Over there is so scared she's out of her mind. Stand still, Joe. Yeah, she must have finally clawed her way out here when she heard us coming upstairs to Duke's apartment. Must have thought we were somebody else. The same guy who left her there with Duke's body. Left her tied up in that chair with those neckties.
She's not moving. Maybe you're...
No, no. She's frozen there, you idiot. Let her keep watching us. Maybe it'll finally sink in. We're all right. And if we're lucky, there won't be any more deaths. Any more music boxes.
What do you mean?
I mean Duke has a sallow face, doesn't he? Pale.
Well, yes, I've noticed as I've shaved him.
So he's the last one. Everybody's accounted for, Elmington. Elmington was getting a manicure. The sallow-faced Duke, he was waiting. And Jeremiah Stark, he was under the towel, half asleep.
Well, I know, but...
Everybody who was in your barbershop, Joe, the day the first music box came to Emily. Tonight, the police were at your place, and you never told them about the music box you said you received. Why not?
Mr. Valentine...
Because that one was Emily's, wasn't it? The first music box, the one that started it all, started you killing people.
But I...
The boys in the barbershop, the boys with more nerve who took her out.
She was a lady. I didn't do those things, Mr. Valentine. I love her.
And she probably never even suspected how you felt until you sent her up here with her scissors and stuff to give Duke a manicure.
That's...
Sure. Who else would she take orders from but her boss? Then you followed along and locked her in until you could finish the other boys.
Oh, that's...
What was the big plan? Were you going to come back here and jump off the building together with her? Big romantic death? Only we moved too fast for you.
Mr. Valentine, I'm here, aren't I? I'm here on the roof.
Sure, you're here, Buster.
I'm here, and you're not touching me. And if you grab, I can run. If she sees me coming...
Nobody's going to hurt anybody, Joe.
Stand still, Lieutenant. You won't stop me, not before Emily and I go to...
Oh, Joe, I like you. I wouldn't hurt you.
Oh, cut it, Johnson. Let him go. It'll be a big romantic death, and people will laugh their heads off.
What?
Oh, what a sucker, they'll say. What a jerk. It'll be in the newspapers and everyone. Joe, you killed me.
Stop that.
And the poem. The poem. I can see it on the front page. Silly little flowers all around it. You have just hit my heart with your dainty smile. Made sweet my soul. Oh, my sweet soul, they'll say. That Joe Murphy's a car.
I laughed, didn't I? I laughed at the poem, too.
Sure, because you had to, because you said it. Corn on whose foot you said, and it killed them. You got the biggest laugh of all, and no wonder. A guy like you dreaming about a blonde manicure.
Stop laughing.
Just a gal, but what a laugh you'll get this
stop
time.
Stop laughing. Stop laughing, all of you. Stop it. Stop it. I'll kill you. I'll kill you.
Hey, I got him. Oh, good work, Valentine, getting him sore enough to rush us. The girl, can you see her? She okay?
Yeah, she saw what happened. She's crawling from the edge. Why, that poor kid. She's been near this same abyss for months and never knew it.
George, I wish I'd had a chance to meet Emily Castle.
Oh, she's not your type, Brooksie. Besides, she'll need a week or two in the hospital to get over that scare.
Oh, the poor thing. Hadn't she ever suspected how Joe felt about her?
No. No, just her boss, that's all. Quiet, polite, didn't talk much. Only the longer she was there, the higher he put her on a pedestal. The crazier his dream got.
Until he finally got up courage and sent her the music box.
Yep. And then she laughed. And the boys laughed. And the dream blew up.
And just because of that, all those murders.
No point trying to explain a guy like Joe, Brooksy. But he happens sometimes. Too much loneliness, too much under his lip.
Mm. Makes you wonder, doesn't it? But she shouldn't have laughed.
Hmm?
Well, she shouldn't have. I know some girls like to go out a lot and have a good time and be happy and everything, but, well, she shouldn't have laughed. I mean, listen. You have dusted my heart with your dainty smile, made sweet my soul with your own sweet glance. Now, what's funny about it? What if it is sentimental? Why should people be so self-conscious nowadays about sentimental things?
Well, don't look at me that way. I'm not laughing.
I'll say you're not.
Oh, the old style, huh? Play that again.
It may be very cold or rainy where you are, but you may be sure your car doesn't mind what the weather's doing so long as you use premium quality Chevron Supreme gasoline. Based on year-round weather records, it's blended for each season and for the West's different altitude and temperature zones. So to get the best out of your car all winter and wherever you drive, go on Chevron Supreme gasoline. With the first tank full, you'll notice right away how much better your car performs. Faster starting on cold mornings, smoother pickup in traffic, powerful ping-free performance on hills. You can't buy a better gasoline for today's high-compression engines. Try Chevron Supreme tomorrow. Get it at independent Chevron gas stations and standard stations where they say and mean we take better care of your car. Tonight's adventure of George Valentine has been brought to you by Standard Oil Company of California on behalf of independent Chevron gas stations and standard stations throughout the West. Robert Daly is starred as George. Let George Do It is written by David Victor and Jackson
George.
Gillis and directed by Don Clark. Virginia Gregg appeared as Brooksy. Ken Christie was heard as Lieutenant Johnson. Ed Begley as Joe. Bob Griffin as Stark and Frank Hale as the landlady. The music is composed and presented by Eddie Dunstetter. Your announcer, John Heaston. Listen again next week, same time, same station, to Let George Do It. This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System.
Nice turnout tonight. Rob Smith Jr. joins good old Bob and Fogsbane in the chat live, and you got all four of the Erie House family. Woo. Here in the studio, myself, Dave Binkley, Gar, V-Ghoul, and CW.
And there's always room for more.
Yes, there's plenty of room on the lawn.
Join the smorgasbord.
Yep.
Join the smorgasbord.
Is there a smorgasbord?
Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story. No typos.
When the barber starts cutting more than hair, it might be time to save a buck and start wearing a toupee. There you go. All right.
Yes, it was all about dreams.
It was all about dreams.
It was. It
Speaking
was all about
of
dreams.
Bad dreams, do you guys remember the Dark Shadows? I mentioned it last week. I'll mention it again. The reason why is in Dark Shadows, there was a music box. It played Josette's theme. Every time they'd open it up, Barnabas would go into a trance or something. No?
Cool.
Okay.
I was not a Dark Shadows devotee.
Oh. See, and that's weird because they had all the monsters were in there, and you missed it.
Oh, yeah, they did have, they had, of course, Barnabas Collins, who was a vampire. They had Angelique,
the
who was a witch. They had Quentin Collins, who was a werewolf.
Werewolf.
They had had Adam, who was a synthetic person, a.k.a. a Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah. They had
they
the headless
had
guy.
The headless guy. Okay.
Yeah, there was a headless guy. It was the guy that was wandering around looking for his head. Remember that?
Ichabod.
Yeah, and then it was a disembodied, cursed arm that moved. It was weird. I don't know, but
okay. Are we talking about the same Dark Shadows over here?
We are talking about yes. See, okay.
Yeah, you know the one with Ernest Borgnine.
Yeah, Ernest Borgnine.
Okay,
he played a gargoyle.
Okay.
No. Yeah, he was in there too.
That was for the arm.
What was funny
was
CW. I don't know if you recall this or not. It scared me as a little kid, terrified me for decades and decades. There was this one scene where a car is driving down a solitary road going somewhere, and it's a guy and his girlfriend, and they're going down, and they stop because there's a tree across the road. So the guy gets out and he's going to move the tree. So he moves the tree, and there is a body down there, and he has no head. And so the guy's like, well, let me check to see his wallet. Maybe we'll figure out who it is that way. Because dental records are, out the door at this point. And so he reaches down and to check the guy's, inside his wallet there. And
I'm laughing.
And all of a sudden, the body with no head grabs him. And I'm like, oh, my. I was a little kid. I probably wet my pants when I saw that because that just blew me away. That was like, wow, crazy. You don't see that. You don't see that.
That was in Dark Shadows?
Yeah, this was on Dark Shadows. And then there was this long, long, drawn-out story arc about this guy, and he got his head chopped off in some way, shape, or fashion. I don't know. But he's constantly looking for his head. So you see this guy walking around the woods in Collinwood looking for his head. And somebody's got the head in a box. And every once in a while, the head opens its eyes and looks around.
Again, I mean, was this in the – I know it went from black and white into color.
Yeah, this was the – yeah. This
was
color.
Was this the black and white before Barnabas or after Barnabas?
No, Barnabas was there, yeah, because it was a curse thing, and everybody was involved in, and how it, oh, man, I remember, wow, yeah, like I said, it terrified me for decades. It was just, wow.
Obviously, you were terribly traumatized by that. But,
there were several things about Dark Shadows traumatizing. That was just one.
I think I just wet my pants listening to that story,
Tell it again, Dave.
You
stay warm.
Me. I'm going to be blocked up for a month. All right, let's, we got a lot of radio.
Yeah, time to go.
A lot of radio.
Time.
find out, was it really on Dark Shadows?
It was on Dark. I'm not kidding. I'm not making it up. I'm not Ernest Borgnine, but that was actually something that they have a lot of story arcs.
The Dark Shadows wiki. I'm going to have to look that up on the Dark Shadows wiki because.
And when you're going to go, Gar, wow, how could you remember that? Because I don't remember my own name, but I remember that, so I don't know. So there you go.
Okay.
Philo Vance is out there, right?
Yeah,
we're going to jump into that?
It is.
Whole lot of radio. Yeah, this one from Philo Vance is called The Music Box Murder Case.
Uh-huh.
Which fits right in with our topic tonight.
Yeah. So we're going to just turn the key on the music box. This one was originally broadcast on or about
January 24th, 1950.
You betcha.
Woo-hoo. Where's the goat?
Dan.
We're not acting like two kids, are we, May?
Why shouldn't we, if that's the way we feel? Who has more fun than kids, anyhow?
Oh, I wish next week would hurry up and get here. You couldn't do anything about rushing it, could you?
No, that doesn't mean I haven't tried. Last night I put on my bridal gown, closed my eyes, and said to myself, this time next week I'll be Mrs. Dan Sanford. Oh, Dan, you've made me so happy. Don't ever disappoint me, will you?
I'll try not to. May I have something I want to...
No, not right now, Dan. There'll be no talking for the next 30 seconds. That's an order.
May, let's stop for a minute and be sensible.
Who wants to be sensible? After next week, I'll be sensible for the rest of my life.
There may not be a next week if you listen to what I'm going to tell you.
Never heard a better reason for not listening to anything in my whole life. Besides, I don't have to listen, Dan. I know what you're going to tell me. You're going to tell me what business you're in. But I already know.
You do?
Certainly. And I'm going to help you, even though I know your business is murder.
Nervous, are you, Dan?
Oh, me, Professor? No, I'm not nervous.
Nothing to be nervous about. You have the rope?
Yeah, sure, I have it. See? It's a noose, just like you told me.
All right, then. Open the door, quietly. You'll find your victim seated in a chair, his back to the door.
All right.
You are nervous, aren't you? What is it, Dan? The job or the girl you're going to marry next week?
I'm okay, I tell you.
Never mind telling me. Show me.
You just watch.
Very well. The door, Dan. Quietly. Hold the rope ready. That's right. Walk over slowly.
All right.
Now! Hey, Dan, you fool! You haven't done anything! Let go of the rope! All right, Billy. Take it off your neck.
Only back a rope, Professor. This guy could have killed me with that rope.
That was the general idea of the dress rehearsal. Only it didn't work. Dan, if that rope were around Billy's neck properly, he'd have made no outcry. I've explained that to you a dozen times.
I tried, Professor.
Yes, I imagine you did. I would suggest you watch Billy demonstrate the technique. He's already done two perfect jobs on victims for me. Assignments on which he acquitted himself admirably.
Oh, was it nothing, Professor?
I think it was. Show Dan how you do it, Billy. After all, he's one of us now. And he should be trained.
Holy mackerel, I've showed him 1,000 times already. Look, stupid, you grab the rope like this.
Yeah.
You're slipping over a guy's head.
Never
you
mind doing
up.
It now. Show him when you two are alone. I'd rather you both left me alone at the moment.
Hey, you going to play that music box again?
The new music box, Billy. The one you brought back to me after your last assignment. Ah, it's a beautiful addition to my collection. Would you like to listen to it?
Yeah, I would.
Very good. Listen. Isn't that beautiful?
Not to me, it ain't.
Well, you wouldn't understand. Do you, Dan?
Well,
do you understand how these music boxes I have in this room represent so much to me? How they make me an individual, apart and above everyone in this world?
Well, I don't exactly understand that, Professor.
Very few people would. But it doesn't matter. Dan?
Hmm?
I have an assignment for you. You're first.
Yes, Professor?
There is a beautiful music box, a most unusual music box in the possession of a man named Daly. I want it, Dan. Tomorrow night.
Yes, Professor.
The music box is in his safe. I'll give you a plan of the room and leave the rest to you. Daly is very wealthy. There'll be money and jewels in the safe.
What do I do with them?
You'll bring them back to me, of course, and you'll receive your share. But the music box you bring back, that belongs to me, alone.
Sit down, Markham, sit down. Nice of you to drop into my office.
Thank you, Vance. Always glad to see you. I had a phone, except that this is something I'd like to talk to you about in person.
The district attorney making a personal appearance. Be careful, Markham. We will have a review of this meeting in Variety.
They'd have nothing to print, Vance, because that's exactly what we have in two identical murders which have occurred in the past 2 weeks.
Oh? Sounds interesting, my friend. What's the complete story?
It's just this. Two wealthy men in this city have been killed, strangled by a rope. Apparently, they interrupted robberies in their homes because the safes of both had been ransacked. We know a lot of money and securities were stolen.
And the killer left no indication of his identity?
None we can find. Sergeant Heath's looking for some kind of a lead right now. He's been working on the murder since they happened.
Heath's a good man. If there's anything to be found, he'll uncover it. What did you want me to do?
Find whoever it is who is responsible for the killings.
Mm-hmm.
Only I can give you nothing at all to work on, Vance, except that I'm reasonably certain both were done by the same man or men.
That isn't much, is it, Markham?
No.
I'll tell you something very strange, though. I'd rather have one little clue than too many. Too many clues are confusing.
I understand. I wish I could...
Oh, telephones have no manners, have they? Just a minute, Markham. Vance speaking.
Hi, Vance. It's Sergeant Heath, homicide. District attorney isn't there by any chance, is he?
Why, yes, he is.
Oh, his secretary wasn't sure if he was going to see you or not. Now put him on, will you?
Certainly. For you, Markham, it's Heath.
Thank you. Yes, Heath?
Mr. Markham, I think maybe we're getting a break in those rope killings. I checked the stuff stolen from both of the men, and guess what?
Heath, please.
Okay, I'll tell you. You see, both of the dead guys are not only rich, but they each had a music box in their safe. Not one of those five and dime things, but real valuable antiques.
Uh-huh.
You know, I think that means something.
Yes, it might. Well, thanks for letting me know, Heath.
No, it's okay, G.A. So long.
Bye. Did you hear that, Vance?
Yes, I did. Very interesting, Markham.
It isn't to me. Not until I find out what is meant by the fact that two music boxes were stolen.
You want to know what it means? I'll tell you. It means that the killer has made his first mistake.
The French doors are right there, Dan. They open to the library. The safe is in the library.
Thanks, May. You've been wonderful.
I haven't done anything I didn't want to. You're the man I love. Man I'm going to marry. This is the work you picked out for yourself, and I've got to help you.
You've been perfect. Getting a job as a maid in this house, giving me the combination of the safe just so my first assignment for the professor will work out. Honey, I can't thank you enough.
Don't try. I left the French doors unlocked before I left. Let's go, Dan. Let's get this over with.
All right. Here's for the doors.
Oh, I should have oiled them.
Ah, nobody heard that. Come on in.
Okay.
There. Use your flashlight, May.
Here we are. There's a safe right over there, Dan.
I see it now. Hold the light on this piece of paper for a minute.
Sure.
12 left, 13 right, 14 left, 1 right. It's the combination. I'll throw that beam on the safe dial.
There it is. Put your glove on and go to work.
Gotcha.
No fingerprints on this job. Just one music box in the safe for the professor and part of the money in the safe for us.
Work fast, Dan, please.
Don't get nervous, honey. We're all right. If anybody interrupts us, I have this rope the professor gave me. I know how to use it. Believe me, I do.
Hope you don't have to, Dan.
I know. I don't want to either. But if it has to be somebody's neck or ours, believe me, it's going to be somebody else's.
Dan.
Huh? What?
I thought I heard a noise just now. A footstep.
I didn't hear it. Yeah. I do. Somebody's coming. I must have woke somebody up.
Let's get out of here.
Oh, no, you stay right here. I'm going over to the door. My rope and me are going to surprise whoever it is.
Dan, the doorknob's turning.
I know, I see it.
What's going on here?
Nothing you're going to remember, friend.
Dan, no. Don't do it. Leave him alone. Don't kill him. Let's get out of here, Dan, please. Dan, you've done it. You murdered him. Let's get out, Dan, while we have a chance.
All right, all right. I guess we'd better. Only what'll the professor say when I tell him I didn't get his music box?
Yes, I understand, Dan. I understand very well what happened.
Well, I'm glad, Professor. You see, it really wasn't my fault. Had the whole job planned perfectly when that Daly had to come downstairs just when I was working on the safe.
Yes, that was too bad.
For him, yeah.
For you, too.
Why, Professor? All I did was... I cut that out.
The music box Daly had. It's still in his safe.
Professor, don't slap me around. I couldn't help it. Ah, Professor!
It's a beautiful thing. A picture of it was in the paper Sunday. A lovely thing. 200 years old. I could kill you.
Professor, please, give me another chance. I'll get it for you. Honest, I will. I'll get it for you tonight.
Oh, no, you won't. It'll be a long time before I trust you with another assignment. Billy will get me that music box. Billy won't fail me. We'll wait a few days until the excitement of Daly's death dies down. And then Billy will get it for me.
Honest, Professor, I'm sorry.
You're sorry. You don't know what being sorry is. I know. I don't have that music box.
Philo Vance speaking.
Markham Vance, I think our long association has begun to do me some good.
Really, Markham? I assure you I'm completely complimented. What's going on?
Have you seen the papers this morning?
Yes, why?
You probably missed this item, but there was a little notice saying that one of the most rare and valuable music boxes ever to come to this country is on sale at Joseph's Antique Shop.
That is interesting.
Interesting? It's going to break our case, these music box murders, Vance. But you see what'll happen?
Suppose you tell me.
All right. You yourself said that the music boxes are the keys to the recent killing. Somebody is music box mad. I feel that whoever it is will try to buy that instrument at Joseph's. Either try to buy it or try to steal it.
That's completely reasonable.
I just saw the item in the newspaper this minute, Vance. Will you meet me at Joseph's? We can work this out together.
Certainly, Markham, if you want me to, I'll meet you. Only I have an idea we'll get there just a little bit too late.
Try throwing the rope, Billy. Throw it this time.
Holy mackerel, Professor. I'm beginning to feel like a cowboy. I do good work with the rope close up, don't I? What do I have to practice throwing it for?
Sometimes you can't get close enough to your victim to slip it over his neck. You see that statue on the pedestal over there?
Yeah, sure.
Throw the noose over the head of the statue from here. Throw it over the head and then yank it. Go ahead.
Okay, Professor, but ain't that hunk of statue worth a lot of dough? You know, I'm liable to break it when I yank
it. If breaking that statue will help you sometime on a job, Billy, it's worth what it cost me. Throw that rope.
Okay, if you say so. Here goes. Holy mackerel, I done it.
Good. You're a much better pupil than Dan is. You did a good job, Billy. And as a reward, I have a special assignment for you. Tonight.
Oh, yeah?
An assignment that will give me a wonderful music box and get you at least $15,000 or $20,000. What do you have to say to that?
Me? See, all I can say is, holy mackerel.
Eerie House Radio is brought to you by Holy Mackerel Sandwiches.
and Tootie Fruity Root Beer.
Holy mackerel, full of wonderful carbs.
Yes. It's just a little
peanut butter on National Peanut Butter Day. National Peanut Butter Day today.
Spread it around.
Really?
Do they have a National Nutella Day?
Spread the word.
Probably. Probably, yes.
What is today? Today.
Is it really Peanut Butter Day?
Yes.
It's, it's Happy National Penguin Awareness Day, to which Burgess Meredith would have said, quack, 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 quack.
My a week and a half ago, had my birthday, right? Okay. Daughter baked this wonderful, it was a chocolate and peanut butter cake, and it had like chocolate and peanut butter Oreos jammed into the icing around it. It was like, oh my God. Yeah, I'm taking a few extra units tonight. Yeah,
I was going to say, you're still here with us. Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, actually, I didn't have any real spikes from that. It was odd. It was odd.
Oh, CW.
Yes.
I put the Dark Shadows info on the Facebook Messenger thing. I ran across all the little bits and pieces talking about the headless guy.
It must be a real thing. It must be a thing.
I'll have to look that up the moment I get to my laptop.
Hokey dokey.
Right now, right now I'm using all the mobile stuff.
Mobile. All right.
Yep. And we're going to mobilize into part two of Philo Vance. We got to get things moving because we've got another special show for you, too. Here's the conclusion of Music Box Murder Case.
This is District Attorney Markham. The Music Box Murder Case concerns the killing of three men, all of whom owned valuable antique music boxes, two of which were stolen. We have no other clues to the identity of the killer or man in the back of the killings, but an item in today's newspaper telling of a new music box to be sold at Joseph's antique shop gave me an idea. And along with Philo Vance, I've gone to the shop. This is one time, Vance, when I believe I've anticipated what you would have done. We have a murderer and a new music box in this store. The murderer will want that music box. We'll either get it first or get a lead to him.
If you say so, Markham. I told you what I thought, though.
That we'd be a little late?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. We'll know in a minute now. Coming?
Definitely.
Your pleasure, gentlemen.
We're interested in that music box we read about in the papers today.
We have an excellent collection of Chinese jade, should you care to see it.
My friend inquired about the music box.
Oh, the music box. You know, so many people inquire about the music box. Could I interest you in some antique chairs, perhaps? We have some that are 150 years old, colonial chairs. Now, let me show them to you. Now, where are they? I'm so nearsighted. Did you gentlemen see any chairs on the floor that are 150 years old?
We don't see a chair that looks a day over 125 years.
Oh. Look, my good man, what about that music box? All you've told us is that several people were inquiring about it.
Oh, that's been sold first thing this morning, as a matter of fact.
Look, I want to know the name and address of the purchaser of that music box. Can you give it to me?
Why, yes, if you like. I don't even have to look it up. I can't remember a face or forget a name. As a matter of fact, the name of the man who bought that box was John Smith.
John Smith? Well, that's too bad.
It is.
Yes. It's obviously a fictitious name, and any address he gave you would be equally fictitious. Well, I'm sorry I brought you down here, Vance. I guess we'll have to find some other way to look for our killer.
I didn't mind coming with you, Markham. And as for finding some other way to look for our killer, I think I've thought of a way to have him look for me.
Hold still, Dan. Please hold still.
Honey, that water hurts.
Water won't hurt anything. Gotta fix your face. It's pretty badly bruised.
It should be. After the professor slapped me around for messing up that daily job last night, he had Billy go to work on me. That guy doesn't fool.
Ooh. Oh, sorry, darling. Dan, let me ask you something.
Oh, some other time.
Now. You will still stay with the professor, regardless of what he's done to you and had Billy do to you?
Sure, why not? I messed up a job. I deserve what I got.
Nobody's got the right to hurt you, Dan. Nobody at all. I take that back. One person has.
Who's that?
I have the right to hurt you, Dan. Because I love you so much.
Vance, what's the plan you have for making the music box murderer come to you?
Oh, I'm afraid I'll never be a carpenter, Markham. Even though I think that nail I just drove into the wall will hold this pulley.
Nice evading of it. Second company?
No. It might be my secretary, Miss Deering. She might have brought some papers from the office. I'll see.
Good enough. Tell Ellen hello for me if you're not inviting her in.
Ellen wouldn't wait for an invitation. Yes?
You're Philo Vance?
Why, yes. Won't you come in?
I must come in. I've got to talk to you. Vance, you... Oh.
My friend, District Attorney Markham.
Hello, Mr. Markham.
Hello.
Maybe it's just as well he's here. Listen, Vance. Do you want to know who's in back of these rope murders?
We most certainly do, young lady. Who are you?
Well, the name is May Terry, only that won't mean anything to you. Now listen carefully. There's a man named Professor Davis who planned all three of the murders. Catch him and you'll have the real killer.
How do you know that?
Well, never mind how I know. All I'm telling you is that I'm getting even for something the professor did. And there's a stooge involved in this. Somebody named Billy something or other. He's the muscle man for the professor. He's the guy who uses the rope.
This is very interesting, Miss Terry. Do you know where the professor and his accomplice can be found?
No, but that shouldn't be too hard for you to find out. That's one reason I didn't go directly to the police. I came to Vance because I have information but no proof. No idea where this professor is.
And you say that the professor has an assistant named Billy who committed all the crimes?
Yes, that's right. Oh, they'll deny it, of course, if and when you find them. But they did the killings together. The professor wanted music boxes. That's what he wanted out of the murders.
We figured as much. But you don't know where we can find either the professor or Billy?
No.
Well, it seems to me, Vance, that we're indebted to this young lady for her information. But she hasn't helped us very much. We're in exactly the same situation we were in before she came.
Not exactly, Markham. We now know what we only suspected before. Can you reach Sergeant Heath on the telephone?
Of course, why?
You'll need him to make an arrest, won't you? You see, I have a way that's guaranteed to make the music box murderer face the music.
You're crazy, May. You're mad. You couldn't have gone to Philo Vance and told him about the professor.
Oh, no, that's what you think, Dan. Nobody's going to slap my man around and get away with it. I also told Vance the professor's stooge Billy did all three murders. You hear that, Dan? All three. And Vance, believe me, you're in the clear now. Get out of town fast. I'll meet you somewhere.
Oh, why did you do a stupid thing like that, May? You spoiled everything. The professor will find out about it. Neither of us will be safe then. We'll be...
Dan! What? Dan, darling, what's happened? Dan!
Hang up the phone, Billy.
Dan, answer me, please.
Mighty fine rope throwing. Is our ex-ally, Dan, where he should be and the way he should be?
Holy mackerel, look, that was a good toss I made with that rope, huh?
Yes, it was. And now, Billy, we're ready for our next assignment.
Well, what do we do about the dame this guy Dan was going to marry?
Well, we'll take care of her, of course. But our next move has to do with a music box.
Oh, again?
Yes, Billy, again. I have the name and address of the purchaser of that special music box Joseph's Antique Shop had on sale. And we're going to get it from the purchaser.
Holy mackerel. He ain't going to have it long, is he?
No, he's not. And we won't be bothered with Dan on this job. It's just as well we got rid of him. I think he would have made trouble for us.
He won't make no trouble for anybody anymore.
No, that's right. Now, Billy, as for the job tonight.
Yeah.
We go to apartment 21 at 50 London Avenue. The apartment belongs to a man named John Smith.
Oh, you got the name and address from the antique shop owner, huh?
Yes, I did.
Uh-huh.
We will go there. You carry your rope, and I'll bring some money. Mr. John Smith will listen to the way my money talks, or to what your rope has to say. The kitchen door is always easier to open than a front door, Billy.
This one will be opened in a second.
Holy mackerel, Professor, you don't have to be so quiet. We banged on the front door of this apartment. Nobody answers. That means nobody's home.
We're less likely to be seen working the kitchen entrance, Billy. Ah, there. That did it.
Yeah.
Well, one good thing about picking a lock, we can always bolt the door behind us and make sure of not being interrupted.
Yeah, sure.
This is John Smith's apartment, where we are going to get that music box I want. Apparently, the tenant is out. And that music box is either in a safe or the living room.
Which we're in right now. Now, how do we find
Billy, Billy,
the music?
Look, on that table, it's the music box. Oh, it's the most beautiful box I've ever seen. Come over here, quick.
Yeah, okay, I'm coming. Oh, gosh, that is pretty, ain't it?
I want to hear it.
Oh, now wait till we get home.
No, I won't. I've got to listen to it now. I'll raise the lid. Oh, Billy.
Yeah, I know. It's wonderful, only not to me. Personally, I prefer swing stuff. Now, you take that dip. Hey, somebody's in the next room. Come on, Professor, let's get out of here.
Oh, I'm ready. I've got the music box. Out the front door, Billy. Hurry.
You don't have to tell me twice. I'm hurrying. Come on, let's get out.
Quick, Professor.
There's a rope around your neck.
I ran into a noose. Now, your hands are free. Get the noose off my neck.
I'm trying to get it off you.
You're in a hurry. The quicker you get it off, the quicker I take you two down to headquarters.
Put your hands up, all of you.
All right.
Come on, put them up. We don't have all day.
All right.
Sergeant Heath, you'd better take them along.
Sure, D.A., anything you say. Come on, you two guys. We want you both for a lot of murders. And you both ought to thank your lucky stars that rope you ran into didn't choke one of you to death.
Yes, they should, Heath. They should thank their lucky stars for that, and we should thank Philo Vance for trapping them for us. Although I still don't know how he did it.
It is a pretty instrument, isn't it, Markham?
Vance, I want to know a lot of things, none of which has anything to do with that music box. How did you get the professor to come up to your apartment so Sergeant Heath and I could grab him?
I asked you two to be there. You were there, weren't you?
Of course, and we have their confessions. What brought them to your place? I thought they'd head for the apartment of whoever that John Smith really was.
They did. I was John Smith, Markham.
I beg your pardon?
I saw that item in the newspaper before you called me about it. Went to Joseph's. Bought the music box and gave the name of John Smith, but my real address. I knew the music box would prove a lure our murderer couldn't resist.
Well, that's fine. And I thought I was so clever in reasoning out a plan to trap the professor. It was a fine plan, only you thought of it first.
Oh, I just got the newspaper before you did, Markham, that's all. I rigged up that rope and pulley in my place, changed the name on my mailbox to John Smith, and had you and Sergeant Heath planted there. Because I was relatively certain that the professor would come calling. And then, if he heard a noise, would be hastily leaving.
Well, Heath made the noise all right on your instructions, Vance. And the professor and Billy ran right into the noose you had fixed up by your door. I wonder how the professor felt when that rope was around his neck.
Probably he regarded it as an omen of things to come. When he ran into the middle of my rope, he knew he was at the end of his rope.
That's right. And we're at the end of the music box murder case.
Thank you.
perfect alike.
Well, wow, what an organ music.
They had the budget of nothing. So
a budget of nothing.
Budget of nothing, and he was getting paid by the note. That's
it's
right.
Like Erie House.
Yep. Yep,
I sure am hungry. Anyway.
We just do it for the screams.
And the peanut butter sandwiches. You're right. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Right. So, yeah, I ran across something else, CW. The severed hand and arm of Count Petrofi was part of the Dark Shadows thing as well.
And not only did we learn that, but let's learn something else. Erie House Radio proudly presents Erie Gar's Moral of the
Bebe,
Story,
bebe.
Number 2.
Information without proof is like butter without the toast. All you end up with is greasy fingers.
There we go. What the hell's wrong with that boy?
You got that dark roast going tonight, huh, Gar?
Dark roast.
I think they went into anaphylactic shock due to peanut allergies.
Oh, no, Dale only gives us the best in non-peanut butter, peanut butter. It's, there's never
no,
that.
No, no, if I knew you were allergic to peanut butter, I would rub it on you until your eyes bulged out like a
rub it on me until my feet glowed. Okay, sure, yeah.
That's right. Your eyes bulged like a bullfrog.
Ribbit. Woohoo! Ribbit. Where is that thing?
No, I
knew it was in there somewhere.
Because I'm mean.
we have to do this. Everybody get ready. On Monday morning, Dale had a birthday, apparently.
Yeah. Well, we all had
a couple weeks ago.
Happy belated birthday.
I didn't get you anything birthday. Yay!
Happy closer to dead day. Yay!
Yay! Oh, he's going
one year closer to the grave. Yay!
Yay!
Yay! You know what that calls for? There you go. All right.
You need more cowbell. Need more cowbell.
No, we don't.
Yeah. Sure, I can give you more. You just say the word.
I said that on a date once, too.
Yeah. All right. That's all you get.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. This show is going straight to Parma.
To Harry Lyme.
Straight to Orson Welles.
Parma.
Parma with the screaming goat.
Okay. We do got to get moving, and we cannot possibly, on this night of nights, miss the lines of Harry Lyme.
I think he had a goat.
He did. And this one's entitled Operation Music Box, and we should get running to make sure we get time to get it all in there.
Uh-huh.
This one was originally broadcast on
October 5th, 1951. Blah, blah.
Play that.
Presenting Orson Welles as the Third Man. The Lives of Harry Lyme. The fabulous stories of the immortal character, originally created in the motion picture The Third Man, with zither music by Anton Karas.
Shot that killed Harry Lyme. He died in a sewer beneath Vienna. As those of you know who saw the movie The Third Man, yes, that was the end of Harry Lyme. But it was not the beginning. No. He had many lives. And I can tell you about all of them. How? Because my name is Harry Lime.
Now, kiddies, London, which is the capital of England, is noted for a number of curious historical events. King Charles was beheaded in London. They had a fire there and a plague. And it is also the place where Harry Lime broke three music boxes and founded an orphan asylum. Please don't ever say I'm not a music lover and a philanthropist, because I'm not.
Orson Welles as Harry Lime, the third man, in today's story, Operation Music Box.
Good afternoon, Mr. Dowdley.
That's right, madam.
I'm interested in a music box.
Certainly, madam. We have a number. I'll go and get them.
Just a moment, though, Mr. Dowdley. I'm only interested...
He didn't hear you. I think he must be a little deaf.
I guess so.
You know, you make me homesick.
What do you mean?
Don't you know what it is to be homesick?
I sure do. I've only been away a few weeks, and I'd certainly like to be back. But why do I make you homesick?
Well, you make me think of Central Park and the fountain by the plaza, Fifth Avenue in the morning in May, and the sound of roller skating on the sidewalk downtown, hoot of shipping on the East River. Everything, in fact.
How do you know I come from New York?
I just guess.
Here's your check, Mr. Lime.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Entwistle.
Here we are, madam. These are all the music boxes we have. These two are 17th century and this one 18th century. This one, well. That's a delightful tune, isn't it?
I should have explained, Mr. Dudley. I don't care if the music boxes were made in the 17th, 18th, or 19th century. I don't care when they were made. What I want to know is, when did you buy them?
But, madam, surely the value of a music box lies in when it was made, not when it was bought.
Not to me, Mr. Dudley. I'm only interested to know whether you purchased any music boxes between February and June of last year.
We're here to sell antiques, Miss...
Chepik.
Miss Chepik. Not to disclose records of our purchases.
Sorry, if you'll excuse me butting in. I guess what this lady's trying to say is that she's ready to buy any music boxes you happen to purchase during that period that she's been...
I'm not trying to say anything. I'm quite capable of making myself understood, thank you.
But, Miss Chepik, do I take it that it is as Mr. Lime here suggests?
Yes.
Well, in that case, we'll see what we can do for you. What do our records say, Mr. Entwistle?
Ah, yes, let me see. During the period in question, sir, we purchased four music boxes, three of which have since been sold.
And the fourth?
It's the one Mr. Dowdley is holding at the moment, madam.
May I look at it, Mr. Dowdley?
Certainly.
Got a hammer.
A hammer?
A hammer?
Yes, a hammer.
You're not going to buy this music box just to smash it up, are you?
Yes, do you mind?
Well, it's all right with me.
I've never heard of such a thing. In 50 years' experience of selling antiques, I've never heard of such a thing.
Why should you care? You can name your own price.
Oh, there's a little more to it than that, isn't there, Mr. Entwistle?
Certainly, I think so.
Miss Chepik, I don't like to see beautiful things willfully destroyed. No?
I said you could name your own price, Mr. Dudley.
Oh, in that case, I must warn you, the price will be a stiff one. Entwistle, give Miss Chepik a hammer.
What? Very well, Mr. Dudley.
Is this a habit of yours, breaking up music boxes?
You don't know how many I've broken up in the last week.
Well, here comes your hammer.
Here you are, Miss Chepik.
Thank you. No good.
And that little act of wanton destruction, Miss Chappick, will cost you exactly £35.
It's okay, Mr. Dudley, but I'd like you to do one thing more for me, if you will. I'd like you to let me have the names and addresses of the people who bought those other three music boxes. I'll pay a stiff price for that, too.
Let me get you a taxi.
Don't bother.
For a minute, I thought he was going to refuse to give you those addresses.
Well, he didn't, did he?
Taxi. Oh, so he's trying that when the flag's down.
I know. He's waiting for me.
Well, in that case, you can give me a lift.
I don't suppose for a minute we're going in the same direction.
That's just where you're wrong.
And that's how I met Myrna Chappick. My interest in this girl was twofold. First of all, she definitely started where the petty girls left off. And secondly, there was this little matter of the music boxes. My left little toe was twitching. Could have been the damp weather, of course, but with me it's usually a sign that money is in the air. Anyway, an hour later we were on our fourth martini, and Myrna was beginning to unbend. Now, come on, Myrna. What is all this? What's the idea of busting up all those music boxes?
Have you heard of Jan Chappick?
You mean the Czechoslovakian guy, the politician?
Yeah.
What's he got to do with it?
The day before he died, he wrote me a letter from London. Hand me my purse, will
you? Yeah, here you are.
Here, you can read it.
My dear Myrna, you will not know me except perhaps from seeing my picture in the paper many years ago, but then that is not surprising, because I only know you from seeing yours. The other day, I happened to see in an old issue of the American magazine Esquire a colored photograph of Myrna Chappick. I couldn't help remarking the resemblance to your mother, my sister, who left for America some 25 years ago. Had you ever heard of this guy? Did your mother ever mention him?
Not that I remember.
Well, how come you took your mother's name, not your father's?
My father's name was Chappick. He was a coal miner in Pennsylvania.
It's a funny thing, your mother marrying a man of the same name, wasn't it?
Well, as a matter of fact, it wasn't. She was an Italian.
And the man who wrote this letter wasn't your uncle.
No, he couldn't have been it. You know I'm talking too much. I don't know whether it's you or the martinis.
It's both.
Well, go ahead, read the rest of it.
Okay, now, my dear niece, this is a painful task which I have before me, but really there is no possible choice. You must know that when the communists seized control in my country, a price was put on my head, and I only managed to escape at the very last moment by concealing myself in the tail of an American airliner which was leaving Prague that night. Like many others in Europe in those terrible last years, I managed only to take away with me the meagerest of possessions, a small traveling case light enough for me to carry, for I was ailing and feeble even then. I have said that the purpose of this letter is a painful one, but perhaps you will not find it so, because after all, you do not know me, and surely will not receive the news of my death with any sorrow. But the fact is that I will be gone by the time you read these words, which are not intended so much for a farewell. People who don't know each other can't very well say goodbye, can they? But as a last will and testament, I am leaving you the contents of my little suitcase, Myrna, a few shirts, a necktie, and the unfinished manuscript of my last book. These you will not find very exciting, I'm afraid, and I can't imagine you're traveling across the ocean to claim such an inheritance. But there is a music box, Myrna. It's the only thing of value I could take away with me on my flight. I want you to have it, and I give you my word that it will be worth your trouble to come after it. The landlady, who is not a sympathetic woman, has not been entrusted with the secret, and unluckily she has not been paid for the rent of this attic room for several weeks. By the time you come to London, she will have sold it, and you must find out where and to whom, and you must buy it back. And now my hand is very tired, and I cannot go on pushing this pen across the paper for many more words. I send my blessing to the child of my sister, who has inherited her wonderful green eyes, and also something else almost as wonderful and almost as green. Your Uncle Yan. Almost as wonderful, almost as green. That could be emeralds.
I'm sure that's what it is.
And you think the emeralds are concealed in the music box? In a false bottom or something?
I don't think it. I know it. And I'm going to get those emeralds if I have to break up every music box in London.
I left Myrna a good deal later that night.
He had a wonderful time. I had to promise that we'd meet the next evening. I also had something else. I had that list from Dowdley's antique shop. Oh, yes, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking I pinched it out of her purse. And you're right. Well, I did. Somewhere in London, there were three music boxes, and one of those three was a fortune in emeralds, and I've always been a great believer in the old adage, finders, keepers. Yes, if anybody was going to break up any music boxes, it was going to be me.
Good
yes.
morning. Is Miss Moira Corkbuttle at home?
No, she's out.
Well, have you any idea where she's gone?
Well, I wouldn't like to say for sure, but well, you could try the Velvet Penguin.
All right. The Velvet, what?
It's a nightclub.
Velvet Penguin? But a nightclub? This is 10 o'clock in the morning.
Well, if she's anywhere, that's where she'll be.
Orson Welles returns in just a moment as the third man.
That's right. So we're all going to hook up at that that establishment. The Purple Pit, was it? No.
The Purple Pit?
Right. The Purple Pit. You don't know what the Purple Pit is from?
No.
Nutty Professor.
Dark Shadows.
That's where Buddy Love would wow the kids.
Oh, okay.
Oh, the Nutty Professor.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Purple Pit.
Now, when I heard that the zither music, it reminded me of the Monty Python, the bazooki players.
Yes.
Like, would you stop playing that bazooka?
In the cheese
kit,
stop the bloody bazooki player.
Yeah. But apparently it's not that. It's a zither. Now, a zither is a very large instrument. I don't know who's going to be schlepping around a zither.
Well,
I've never seen one in a marching band.
Yeah.
Well, it's portable. It's a portable. There may be different sizes to it, but it's akin to, you know, it's not a full-size harp where you have to, you know, schlep that thing all over the place or a bass fiddle. It's small.
Right. Well, it's like the slide guitar thing, the Hawaiian slide guitar. Kind of a, I guess you could make it mobile.
If you remember Granny from the Beverly Hillbillies, that auto harp she sometimes played.
Oh, yeah. I have one. I can't believe I have it, but I have one.
Yeah, it's about the same size as that and a Vulcan lyre.
Ah, okay.
A Vulcan lyre.
And Vulcans never lie.
A Vulcan lyre.
They never lie.
Not to be confused with the... with the Ferengi liar, because they just lie, you know. But that's
that's
the 98th rule of acquisition.
That yeah, exactly. That and don't touch my zither, right?
not in public at least. That's right.
Yeah. So no, the zithers I've seen the Chinese zither, they're rather massive, but I guess they could downsize it. I guess I don't know.
That could have been in steroids. So.
Yes.
I don't think what you thought. If it was Asian, that might be something that's akin to it, but it's a completely different instrument.
Well, I could be wrong. I think the zither came from China, but I could be wrong.
Everything came from China.
Well,
there you go.
We don't want to go too far with that, but yeah.
Yes.
But just for reference, the performer who did that in the movie The Third Man, that was I apologize, I can't remember his name, but he was Greek.
His grandmother was Chinese.
Thingopolis.
Yeah, sure.
Thingopolis.
Yeah.
We're not sure. We'll mull it
over. There was a diphthong in his name. We'll never know.
I beg your pardon?
Huh?
I thought you wear that on your feet.
That's grammar. Well, I got it printed on my T-shirt, so it's got to be
diphthong.
True. You know,
yeah.
Diphthong.
So anyway, that's the magnificent instrument that makes that melodious sound.
Yes, and it's not a bazooki. But it could have been.
Well,
Monty Python could have been faking us out. The sounds could have been a zither, but they had some guys sitting there fake playing bazookies. I don't know. You know.
We'll validate our facts.
And our
go.
Parking.
Yes.
Hey, I never got my parking validated.
I didn't drive a car. So.
When do you try to get out of the lot?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, letting,
there you go.
We're not letting the drawbridge down until
the fat goat sings. Yeah, okay, sure.
Until the fat goat screams.
There was a cue there.
Yeah.
Where's that goat?
I guess the goat's sleeping.
Oh, that's silly. Oh, there he is. Woohoo!
What a way to lead into the exciting conclusion of Operation
Yay.
Music Box from the lives of Harry Lyme.
And now, Orson Welles, as the third man, continues with today's story, Operation Music Box.
Like all nightclubs, the Velvet Penguin looked more than ordinarily squalid at 10:30 in the morning. Most of the chairs were piled up onto the tables, and by the glare of a work light, an unhappy-looking character in shirt sleeves was pounding a piano. A girl was singing. Three or four other girls were waiting their turn, while a committee of fat, sleek gentlemen sat in judgment.
Okay, honey, that'll be enough. We get the idea. Yeah, what's your name again?
Moira Corkbattle.
Yeah, we'll let you know if anything turns up. Don't call us, we'll call you. Next.
Pardon me, Miss Corkbottle.
Yes?
My name is Lyme. I'd like to talk to you for a minute, if you don't mind.
What's it about, a job?
Well, no,
it isn't. I'm not interested. I've just about as much of this audition racket as I can take. I'm fed up with the whole cabaret game. Just as soon go back to singing in front of a band, even in the small.
Sorry, I just wanted to ask you about that music box you bought at Dowdley's last February.
You a detective?
Not exactly. You did buy one, though, didn't you?
Yes, I did, but it didn't do me any good.
What do you mean it didn't do you any good?
Well, I thought it would soften him up.
Soften who, Miss Corkbottle?
My uncle, of course. My uncle Ben Corkbottle. You know, General Corkbottle.
No, I don't know.
You mean you never heard of General Corkbottle?
No, I never did.
Well, you haven't missed anything. He's an old skinflint and he hates women, even nieces who send him nice antique boxes filled with his favorite Turkish cigarettes on the occasion of his 101st birthday.
Is he really that old?
Oh, of course not, but he acts that way.
He has the box.
Yes, when last heard from, he had the box. I wish he had the measles.
Would you like to be a good kid and give me his address?
Yes, all right. Give me a bit of paper and pencil and I'll write it down for you.
Here you are. I'll write it on this.
Okay. Now, look, if you see him, tell him I'm starving to death, which is true, that I speak of him constantly, which is also true, and that if he can see his way clear to sending me £100 or even a fiver, but no, he won't. I know him. Well, good luck with the general, Mr. Lyme, and don't forget to wear your bulletproof vest.
Sir, I'm not. I'm a collector.
Dust collector? Garbage collector? What kind of collector? Well, speak up.
Music boxes.
Oh, another one. By God, the thing's turning into a positive plague. Come in, come in, come in. Let's get to the bottom of it.
Thank you, sir.
Just, we'll come into my study. Now, what's the explanation of this wild rash of music box collectors? You'd want a music box. Blasted things make you jump. Give me the Jim Jams. Well, come in, young fellow. Must be something in music boxes I don't know about. A fine-looking young woman like Mr. What was your name again, my dear?
Chapek, we know each other, General.
Oh, you do?
Yes, we do.
Yes, well, that's not surprising. After all, you music box bugs probably have some kind of club or other. Hold meetings, swap boxes and all that, eh?
Oh, we're going to hold a meeting, General. You can be sure of that, Harry.
Now, please, Myrna, don't misunderstand.
I understand perfectly.
Now then, I haven't got all the morning.
Yeah. Here we are now.
Now then, before this young fellow interrupted us, you were making me an offer.
Yes, for your music box, General.
Oh, that is if you're willing to sell, General. What's your price?
£2.
£3.
£4.
£10.
15 guineas.
25 guineas. This is as high as I'll go.
Well, that's the highest bid. Well, going, gone. No, don't write a check, young fellow. I'll take it in cash.
You've got a nerve horning in on this. I guessed you were up to something when I missed that list from my purse. You took it, didn't you?
Sure, I took it. What are you worrying about? You seem to be doing all right without the list.
Only because I happen to remember seeing the name Cork Bottle on top of the list, and luckily there are only three or four of them in the phone book.
Smart kid. You deserve better luck.
My luck's all right. I've caught up with you, haven't I? From now on, you've got yourself a constant companion.
Oh, good.
So you'd better start getting used to it.
Well, that shouldn't be hard. Myrna.
Yes?
Give me that hammer.
Give it another sock.
No use, Myrna. No use. It isn't this one.
How do you do?
Good afternoon. Are you Mr. Chelychev?
I am Count Chelychev.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Yes. Count Chelychev, I wonder if we could come in for just a moment.
Well, I don't know. Chelychev, I don't know. I am pressed for time.
Oh, we won't take any...
Well, I suppose I can spare you a few minutes.
Oh, thank
just
you very
a few
much.
Minutes.
Thanks.
Come in.
Most kind of you, Count.
This way,
well, face you got
it
here.
It is. It's wonderful. I can see that you're a man of taste, Count
yes.
Chelychev. You've got some lovely pieces of furniture
it
here.
It is possible, possible.
Oh, no,
not what I was used to in the old days, in the Tsar's time.
Oh,
no. What is it you want, please? What
well,
do
we
you
have?
We
I believe you're a collector of
music box.
Boxes.
Please, just a minute. One at a time.
I'm sorry, Count. Yes,
now, what is all this about music boxes?
I
am not a collector of music boxes. I am a collector of miniatures of the Empress Catherine of Russia.
Well, what about this music box on the table here?
Oh, I bought that one, certainly. But only because of the enamel portrait medallion of Catherine on the lid. She is an ancestor of mine.
Oh, is she? Yes.
Hey, look, can't you see the resemblance to me?
Yes, and now you've met. Yes, remarkable. But do you mind if I set this thing going?
No, please don't do that. Please. No. No, don't.
That's all right. There we are.
I am not interested in this as a music box.
Oh, you aren't. Well, in that case, Count, maybe you'd be ready to sell it.
Sell it?
Yes,
certainly not.
Oh, but...
I told you, I want it for the miniature on the lid.
Can't we persuade you to change your mind?
Sure
we're prepared to pay. A good price.
No,
for
price
it.
Doesn't enter into it, my dear lady. I don't buy things to sell again.
Well, this particular music box happens to be awfully important to us. Yes.
I can't help that. I'm sorry. I couldn't possibly sell it. No use talking. No use arguing.
You know, it's a very lucky thing for you, Myrna, my girl, that you've got me as a partner in this business.
I hadn't noticed
that.
There wasn't much luck about the Chelychev episode. We haven't got the box.
We soon will have the box.
How come?
Because, my dear old girl, it so happens that just for kicks, I once took lessons from one of the best cat burglars in the business. Count lived in what was once a big private house that had been turned into three or four flats. There was a garden and a big wall. That night I got over the wall, crept through the garden, climbed up to the second floor and got through the window into the Count's drawing room. I worked quickly and quietly. I cut a small section out of the crystal cabinet with my diamond cutter that contained the Count's objet d'art, got through to the latch, unlocked it and seized the music box. And then, at that moment...
Minute there. What's the hurry? What's going on?
Officer, we've just been burgled. A burglar got in my flat over there. He's stolen my father's antique music box. Did you see anyone come around the corner over there?
No, sir. He can't have come this way. We'd better try the other way. Quick. Just a minute, Jerry.
Well, there were no emeralds in that one.
No. It was a pleasure breaking it up. Good afternoon. We'd like very much to see the French professor, Margulta.
I'll get you two get past the old porter downstairs.
Like this.
Oh, I see.
You, honey.
Well, I'm afraid the Principessa wouldn't see you without an appointment.
Tell me, before she was married, wasn't she Mabel Schroeder from Dubuque, daughter of the chain store king?
Yes, she
and
was.
And she was divorced from her husband last year, wasn't she?
That's right.
That's who I talked to.
That don't mean she's looking for any boyfriends. With her money, there's always plenty of those.
Well, don't look at me like that. I only want to speak to her.
I really don't think it's possible.
Here she comes.
All right,
Ethel.
Good afternoon, these people.
Principessa, we've been... trying to locate a music box.
A music box?
Yes, it's it's a music box we've been trying to locate. I don't know whether anybody sent you a music box, Principessa?
Yes, sir, we certainly did have a music box. Mr.
Lime.
Lime.
Yes.
A gentleman friend of mine gave it to my little daughter, Shirley.
Oh?
We haven't got it now.
Oh.
We gave it away to some charity or other.
What?
I believe it's a St. Andrew's Foundling Home in Orphanage, down in the East End here.
Shirley sure hated that music box.
Why was that, Principessa?
She couldn't stand that tune.
What tune?
Oh, you know, that awful tune.
Look, this is the place, Harry. St. Andrew's Foundling Home and Orphanage.
Looks as if there's some kind of a ceremony going on.
Silence, please, for our director.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen and children, a little while ago, some kindly soul sent to us anonymously, amongst other gifts, a music box. A few days later, little Billy Gubbins, whom you all know, whilst playing with the box, stumbled and dropped it. This incident, trivial in itself, had the most surprising result. A secret compartment in the box was revealed, and in it were jewels. Naturally, we made inquiries in an effort to identify the donor, but fortunately for us, they all proved fruitless. And it is from the sale of these jewels that the building of this wonderful new wing is being financed. Here in my hands is the very box that brought about our good fortune. And I might add, it can still be used as a plaything by little Billy Gubbins. Listen.
No.
Harry!
Does there happen to be amongst the visitors a doctor? A gentleman back there seems to have fainted.
Returns in just a moment.
Ben Franklin said about honesty being the best policy. I wish I could.
Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story, number 3.
I'm on mute. Okay, there we go.
Sir, moral
a hidden gift is only a gift if it no longer stays hidden.
There we go. That's a big cat you got there with that bell.
It is, I tell ya.
Big cat.
That's a good thing that music, that the gems were in the last music box they looked for. Otherwise, the story had been over a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's all about the zizzer.
Yeah. If you're zithering, you're all right. Or a bazooki. Zither or bazooki. We're not picky.
There you go.
But it should be one.
And thanks to good old Bob to specify which variety of zither that was, a German zither.
Not to be confused with the Uruguay zither.
Or the Lithuanian zither.
That's made out
of
mushrooms. Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
The Parmesan zither.
The Pomeranian zither. It's got 4 feet.
Yeah. And it's got poofy little hair.
And it'll bite your ankle in a heartbeat.
Yep.
Could this show have been one of the very first prequels? I'm wondering.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Because this is
a
prequel to the movie. And this could have been one of the very first, you know, because they killed him off in the movie. So this was the adventures he had before he got killed off.
Yes, my pre-dead adventures.
Yeah.
How I'm telling you these stories after I'm dead is beyond me. But we're going to tell you a story before we're dead, hopefully, tomorrow. Hope we last that long. CBS, Jesus Christ. CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Yeah, man.
Yeah.
It's The Special Undertaking. Bit of a darker tale.
Well, I think something happens when our show's finished, doesn't it? At 8 o'clock?
Yeah.
Tomorrow? After 8 o'clock, something goes on. What would that be?
We're what are we doing? We're Horrible Horror starring Guard of the Ghoul, and we are... What are we? There's going to be a blizzard, and then we're getting on a submarine. You figure it out.
I like blizzards. I like blizzards. Uh-huh. I like the Reese's Pieces blizzard. Yes, not the kind that we
those
had
are
here.
Good. Those are good.
Uh-huh.
Those are good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ice cream is the answer.
Mostly verboten for me.
We have Avery Shriver who. Is the weather wizard or something, I forget, from Monster Squad, 1976. Tune in for that fun.
Ah.
Yeah. That was a good movie, Monster Squad. Anybody see that?
The thing with Fred Gandy.
Fred
yeah, Gandy. On the Saturday morning, I like that a lot better than the movie. The movie had a few derogatory takebacks in it, but... Other than that, okay.
I just thought it was a true homage to the old Universal monsters.
Right, but they named it after the show from 76. So was it a nod from that? Or, I don't know, it all kind of tied in.
I don't know. Well, we hope everybody comes back tomorrow. That's at 6:30 and again at 8. When we're done, check out Guard the Ghoul.
On that Twitch thing.
Twitch.
We got some itching powder, so we're not twitching as much, but yeah.
Itching powder.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that the Bedrock Twitch? Wasn't that what? And Margrock and Swan, the Bedrock Twitch?
Oh, yes. Right. The Bedrock Twitch. The Twitch.
Yeah,
that thing.
Twitch. And Bedrock Twitch.
Yeah, that was weird. They did something like that on the Jetsons, too. They had some type of Jetsons Twitch or something.
Yeah, because of all that crazy rock and roll that was coming out.
The zoink, zoink, boink, boink. I forget what it was called.
It was eep, eep, op, 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 op. And that was Howard Morris, who was also Ernest T. Bass.
And we will see you guys tomorrow night. Gotta wrap it up.
That is so funny.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And him and her.
When next we meet in Frankenstone.
Yeah, lots of her.
Don't come alone.
We got the little extra howl there.
Yeah.
There you go.
There you go.
All for the same admissions price.
Ernest D. you got me on that. And the recall, just amazing. Oop, oop, eep, eep, op, op, whatever that was. Yeah.
Walla, walla, bing, bang. No.
Op, op. Eep, op, 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 that means I love you. Come on and fly with me, through the sky with me, et cetera, et cetera. Yep. Howard Morris.
That's a good recall. Well, I had one shining moment with the Dark Shadows, but the eep, eep, oop, oop thing. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's the quote of the night.
Thank you very much. And with that, gentlemen, I really must be away until tomorrow.
Before you take off, are you guys ready for another Erie House 4 number I'm working up right now?
Oh, God. Go for it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I can't hear you. The reception must be off.
I take that as a yes, then.
Run while you can.
My phone provider said I can't hear anymore. What happened? I don't know. What is that?
Dave, what do you got?
I know.
Well, I have the classic song, Mama Cass song, Scream a Little Dream of Me.
Scream with me.
There you go.
Scream a little dream of me. Yeah. There you go.
Scream a little scream with me.
I pretty much have the lyrics down. I have some little conversation we have to do when they're doing the big musical interlude there. So I'm working on that.
When's this homework assignment due?
I don't know. I'm going to start a Patreon to get a bazooki.
I'm still working on lyrics, but we'll get it all out there, and then
turn it in with your thesis.
Give you guys.
Yeah. I guess I'm going to have to. Oh my gosh.
it's not that much work. I do all the work, guys.
you don't need us.
For my part only. I suck at singing, okay?
I'm sorry, we were supposed to disagree. No, you sing amazingly. I've never heard anyone sing like you.
If you disagree with me on this particular point, there's something wrong with your hearing.
What?
If you disagree with me on that particular point, then there's something wrong with your hearing, because I do, in fact, suck at singing. Yes, they do.
What?
but this is just fun little novelty things.
They are fun. What do we have? How many so far, Dave? Four? Three?
We have one, two, three so far, yes.
Three so far.
Only one with the Erie House 4.
Ah.
Is that including Moose and Elk?
Moose and Squirrel?
No.
Moose and Squirrel.
Where Are You Tonight was the first one. Then the second one was the Are You Lonesome Tonight? And then the third one was the Monster Holiday. And this would be number four. We're going to have an album. We're going to have an album before we're all done here.
Actually, when I think about it, this is my fault, because I think that first one was my little...
Yep, it is. It's all your fault. So you know,
all your fault.
Yeah.
It was all a bad dream, and Dale's fault.
Now I hate you.
Go eat some cake.
I hate me.
Don't do that. That's our job.
It's gonna be fun.
It's tough at the top.
Have another spoonful of brown sugar. There you go. We'll wash it down. A little honey, and then some. There we go.
Don't forget the molasses.
And the cherry on top.
Fun, guys.
And the maple syrup on top.
Oh,
man.
I'll tell you what, though. That wouldn't be a bad way to go out. That or the Johnson triplets. One or the other. I would accept as my last day on Earth. Yeah.
There was like a television show called Good and Evil, I think, or something, or maybe it was something else.
Yes. Yes.
And there was a guy, and he was on a bench, and he was eating this, like, incredible steak fatty sandwich thing, and he died.
Oh.
And an angel came up and said, "Was it worth it?" And the guy was like, "It sure was. That sandwich was amazing."
I can see me going out like that. I can see me going out like that. Like with Mama Cass with a ham sandwich in my mouth, you know.
Dale, I came up with this a long time ago.
That's actually an urban legend.
I know it is, but I found it fun to say.
Oh.
At a certain point in your
you have to
realize, like
it was
Dale said,
if
you're closer to the grave than not, just start with dessert first, because you never know when you're going to go.
And at my age, I always have to go. Ah! What did that goat see that made him screech like that?
He was just saying hi.
found out what was in that whopper that it was eating. That would make me scream too.
a regular whopper or a plant burger?
See, the regular Whopper. I'm still ashamed to say I still haven't had an opportunity to try the plant one yet. I just don't care to stay in line for about 55 hours to try and get to the window to order.
Yeah.
They eat a bush or whatever. Yeah.
A tree. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Whatever.
I can pick some twigs off of the ground.
Yeah.
A square of sod,
if you will. You know,
fast food ain't
like the mayo on that.
Fast food ain't fast anymore. You definitely got that one right.
Yeah.
Well, I've gotten to the point where I don't like restaurants any. I used to work in a restaurant. One of my 9,268 jobs I used to have. I worked in a lot of restaurants, and I'm not gonna. I don't feel comfortable going to a restaurant anymore because I can't see them prepare the food.
That may be a good thing.
With respect to fast food, as I got older, I decided that I like slow food better because it's much easier to catch.
Yeah. So what you're eating turtles?
I can tell you that even in a high-end restaurant. Not always, but on the odd occasion, things are not as good as they should be.
I know. Now, believe it or not, in the fact that I'm Garth Thaddeus Gernstein holds no weight in this, but one of the cleanliest restaurants you're going to run across is probably a kosher shop.
Yes.
Where, they
got rules, man.
They got rules.
Yeah.
And then somewhere along the lines, you know.
That's
one of the best rules is the floor is lava.
But seriously, though, if you look at a bag of potato chips or corn chips or junk food, snack foods, you'll see the insignia K and P. It's kosher and parve. That means it's for a kosher person who's keeping kosher. It's actually, sadly, even though it's lousy for you, it's cleaner than a lot of other things.
Right.
You can buy at the store.
Wait, there's kosher potato chips?
Yes, there are fried.
They never looked at
it. Yeah, it's on the back.
Yeah, they have that little cap on the top of them.
K, it has a letter K, and then it'll have in a triangle the letter P, kosher and parve. That's what people who keep kosher, they have a rabbi somewhere on site there, otherwise they can't do it.
Rabbinically supervised, yes.
Yeah.
All the potatoes have a little yarmulke on them. It's great.
not that bad, but it's not that serious, but no.
I just learned that kosher salt has nothing to do with the Jewish tradition. Yeah,
being blessed.
You haven't heard of kosher salt? There's
yeah,
kosher.
It's true. I forgot where it came from. Why they call it kosher?
Well, what I watched said that it had to do with koshering. In that sense, is almost like brining.
Yes.
Okay, and that's where it came from. And the whole thing was that kosher salt is coarse, and subsequently, it's not. It's less. I guess it's less likely to fall off the food or whatever.
Well,
when
of
you
course it
right.
is.
Season.
When they're doing that with a slab of corned beef, when they put it in there and all the brining that goes into a piece of corned beef. It came out of the delicatessens out of the East Coast, New York, et cetera, et cetera. That's exactly. Thank you. I was trying to rack my brain as to why it was called that. That's the reason.
That's what I'm here, just to give you a jump start on the thinking process.
Hi,
thank you very much.
Hopefully it'll help me resume my own one day. That is.
Yep, that's what Mrs. Goldberg, who made kosher, so kosher, my brisket, so kosher.
That's right.
You gotta love it.
Yeah.
My brisket.
Now I went back when I was a cook, those 968,000 times, I was a good cook. But
in the Navy?
I've seen some. Huh?
Did you cook in the Navy?
I did not. I was not a cook in the Navy.
He was on KP.
No, never was. I don't know if they just need extra hands and that's a land job or what. But on the ship, there were people. There were certain people. It's like you stay away from the kitchen because it's a sanitary place. You know, I mean, one bad batch of goulash and takes out the entire ship. You know,
especially if you're. Can you imagine what would happen if you're on a sub? Oh my God!
Oh yeah, it's not pleasant. It is not pleasant. That's why there's no chili on a sub.
Hang it over the side, pal. Hang it over the side.
You know.
Just wave the white flag and go.
They're the torpedo tubes with you, guy. You're just too smelly. You know.
The torpedo tubes. Oh God!
Fire number one.
Ugly picture in my head.
Run silent, run deep.
Yeah, oh, no, geez. Not on the sub. No.
CW, you're on fire today.
See, and speaking of, that's why they have matches on subs, you know. It gets too bad, you just spark them up, man, you know.
Walk around with
a bunch of lit matches.
Not in an enclosed area. It would be like the Hindenburg underwater. Yeah.
No, I'll take care of it.
Now I know why they had all those shots for Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea where the Sea View came bounding up through the waves.
Uh-huh.
That's why.
In fact, CW, tomorrow, that's what we're going to be watching is Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. Not the movie, one of the episodes. If you're free.
I may just chime in there. It's going to be on your Twitch.
It's on the Twitch, yeah.
On the Facebook.
We'll have a link.
With
is that your free
Richard
feature?
Basehart.
Basehart, yes.
David Hedison.
Yeah.
Yep.
Also known as Al Hedison.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's
John
Hedison.
He was Al Hedison.
Yeah.
See, this is what I didn't
David
get.
David Hedison. Yeah.
Yeah, go
David
ahead.
Hedison's daughter. David Hedison's daughter is married to Oscar winner Jodie Foster.
Ooh,
really?
I didn't know that.
I did.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Hmm.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. No, so here was my deal. As I ran across the Sea View and the thousand, the bottoms of the sea and all that, I'm going like, okay, it's a submarine, right? So the submarine, it goes down, it goes up, it goes down, it goes up, periscope down. You know, they got a bay window and bubbles and all, you know. So I'm going, okay, so what's the interaction? They're constantly interacting with people. I'm like, you're in a sub. What? How do they get people to interact with? But they do. It's weird. Whole lot of interaction for a sub. Sub-Zara, and they stayed in the water. Yeah. You know, they didn't.
Well, we do have these big nuclear subs, but we still don't have the flying sub. I would love a flying
sub. Yeah. No. Yeah, they had that flying thing. I was like, what's that?
I have a model kit yet to put together of the flying sub.
Ah, okay. Well, there you go.
Yep.
Well,
can't have a
are.
Flying sub until we have flying cars. I need a flying car before I need a flying sub.
This is the first time in about, I think, 15 years that I've been doing the program. Never had Voyage of the Bottom of the Sea on there, so it's a first. And I think the one, the Monster Squad, too, I've never had this particular episode on, although I have shown different ones. Never shown this one. It's kind of odd. Bunch of firsts tomorrow.
Dave, do you know if Richard Spaceheart, who had a wonderful speaking voice, by the way, did he ever do any radio?
He did pantomime on radio.
I don't believe he did. I remember him in some films in the 50s, very much, very young. We did one of them, The Black Book, with Robert Cummings movie, where he was the second lead.
Yes, he was Robespierre.
Yes.
Robespierre.
He was. Yes. I thought that as great as a movie about the French Revolution, not one person even tried one bad French accent in it.
Thank goodness for that.
The phony Maurice Chevalier accent thing?
One of Donald Sutherland's earliest film roles was in a horror movie, and he was a French something, and he didn't speak French, didn't even try to lilt nothing. It was hilarious. It was one of those Edgar Allan Poe things.
Was it a Roger Corman movie?
Yes. It was a Roger Corman film. And
Donald
so,
Sutherland was in it?
Donald Sutherland, yeah. He was dressed really? Up as a French officer.
Oh, yes. He was.
Oh, that would be the Pit and the Pendulum, then.
No, he was.
It was something about people turning into a statue or something.
I remember the one. I can see him there. He's one of the few guys who looked better when he got older. He looked so dorky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was dorky.
Gangly.
He
was
dorky looking.
Tall. Yeah. Yep.
There's no way, nice way to say it. He was dorky looking.
Yeah.
So he looked much
like
better
that,
when he got older.
Yeah. But he was really silly in that. He was in MASH as well.
Yeah.
He looked great. Yeah,
the movie,
Hawkeye or Trapper John. I forgot which character he was, Hawkeye or Trapper John.
But the French lieutenant or whatever he was, it was just, he wasn't pushing the French thing at all. He was like, okay, I'm here. I'm here to get my $10 and a cheeseburger, you know, and I'll leave. You know.
He probably,
that's because Roger
Corman.
I was going to say Roger Corman didn't pay him enough to have the French accent.
Yeah.
No,
I guess.
The French accent is extra, pal. Are you taking it like this?
I am shocked. Somehow Jack Nicholson got two, Roger Corman got him twice.
Yes. And I don't know if he was in this film with Sutherland or not, but he was in two. And one
and
of them
was
with
Terror,
and
he was in Little Shop.
The Raven.
Oh, and The Raven. So he did three.
Oh, that's right. He did do three. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The Raven.
When you signed up with Roger Corman, you seemed to sign up for a certain amount of hours, not necessarily a picture. So many hours of work. So like when he did the Targets, you know, when Boris Karloff did the Targets, he still owed him like like 2.5 hours of Karloff did.
Did he produce Targets? Because he didn't direct it. That was a Peter Bogdanovich flick.
Right. But I think he was one of the producers because he said, because Peter wanted to direct. So, okay, well, you can have Karloff. I've got him for like 2.5 hours. And he would hold up,
Got him for 2.5 hours.
He would hold those people to those hours they owed.
Yeah, exactly. Somebody had a stopwatch, you know.
You never signed on for projects. You signed on for hours with Roger Corman.
That happened to me on a date. Never mind.
Well, there was one where Karloff is in a wheelchair for the whole movie. He seriously phoned that in.
He was
babysitting a meteorite or something.
Yeah, it was based on, Philip K. No, it wasn't Philip K. Dick. It was it another Poe or I forgot the it was based on it's called The Color of Outer Space. That's the name of the
movie.
Was
that one of those Mexican films he did towards the end?
No.
Mexican Radio.
I don't know, but Karloff was a trooper. He worked until he died, literally.
No kidding.
Yeah.
That guy.
Die Monster Die, maybe? Is that it?
I love that.
It may
man.
Have been. No, it might have been Die Monster Die was the name of the movie, but it was based on, I think it might have been Philip K. Dick's short story, The Color of Outer Space. Nicolas Cage did a version of it not too long ago. They did a reboot of it with
Nicolas
Cage
is going to do Dracula, you know.
Yeah.
Is that for real?
I believe it is.
I think so.
I know he does a lot of schlocky movies because he's still working himself out of when he got taxed to death. He blew all of his cash, but he's a fabulous actor. Don't get me wrong.
He was an idiot with money.
Yeah. He needs a good accountant who's not going to rip him off.
I'd like to see him do Shakespeare.
Yeah. Oh, and Nicolas Cage, if you're hearing me, I can be your accountant. I can definitely give you a budget where you will not go broke inside of 12 months after you make $1 million.
But, Mom.
No, you cannot have that. You may not have that Tyrannosaurus Rex skeleton. It won't go in the living room.
Oh.
And you don't need 15 houses. And you don't need 15 Rolex watches. No. Bad nickels. Bad.
No, I can just feel my nose being slapped. My snout.
Grab his Academy Award. Bad Academy Award winner. Naughty Oscar winner.
Another name, as you said, CW, is Color Out of Space.
That's it.
Yeah. I had to go look it up because I don't remember, like
by,
I said.
You know who wrote it? Was it Philip K. Dick who wrote the story?
I'll have to go back and look. Let's see who wrote it.
Okay. I don't think it was Edgar Allan Poe.
Writer, Jerry Saul, H.P. Lovecraft.
Lovecraft.
Yeah.
Okay, ooh. Lovecraft. Another weirdo.
A lot of Corwin stuff he used Edgar Allan Poe's titles, but he used more stories from Lovecraft than he did from Poe.
This week is the anniversary of Poe's death or his birth, one of the two. I don't know. But
the death. So. It's his death. Supposedly at his grave.
I didn't kill him.
Know if it's still... Okay. If you say so.
Wanted to say I was around, but I didn't kill him. I'm an old ghoul.
Supposedly somebody... I don't know if it still happens. Somebody comes to his grave and leaves a bottle of cognac, French cognac.
And a rose or something?
Yeah.
Yes, that tradition, I believe that there's a group of folks.
There's a group that...
ensures that that continues.
I think there's a group that does that,
The original Poe Toaster and whoever took after them, they're long gone or discontinued.
What?
I've got an alibi. I was in Tijuana at the time, and I've got witnesses, so it wasn't me.
I just want to know where post-toasties come in.
You have to talk to General Mills about that.
Toaster.
That's different.
They drink a toast and they post it in a note somewhere.
Okay,
that's a 3M product.
Throwing me crazy short, and that's a very short trip in and of itself. With that said, I must be away.
Okay, good night, CW. Thanks for stopping by.
Well,
On your way out, you know who to get in here.
Yes.
I'm running down the hallway and knocking on the door. Mr. Durante, you're on.
Good night. We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Aribo, up we the same, and inka-tinka-doo. Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
The foregoing has made it obvious to me that we've had quite enough for one evening. We shall save the rest until next week, when I shall reappear. Until then, good night.